Blog Talk Radio.
T minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and lift off.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the sky!
Hello and welcome to the Flourish and Thrive radio show. This is episode 4 and I am Kate Hartley, your host, helping you live your best life possible with a selection of inspiring and uplifting interviews from people who have dug deep, been brave and have followed their dreams and are now turning those dreams into reality. My guests bring a combination of inspirational stories and strategies for overcoming roadblocks. My guest today is Sunita Patani, and she is helping to bring the worlds of science and spirituality closer together. I first met Sunita while we were both studying for our psychotherapy qualifications. I've been fascinated following her journey and how she has gone on to not only develop a successful and thriving psychotherapeutic practice, which incorporates EFT matrix re-imprinting healing, as well as meta-healing, but she's also authored two books. The first is titled My Secret Affair with Chocolate Cake, following her struggles with binge eating disorder, and the second is titled The Transcendent Mind, the missing piece in emotional well-being. And it proposes the concept of a transcendent mind and how it relates to emotional healing. Following the release of The Transcendent Mind, Sunita has become an established international speaker, teaching and facilitating workshops in Brazil, India, and the States. As well as blogging for the Huffington Post, she is also a featured psychotherapist for the BBC Asian Network. She is currently co-authoring her third book, Quantum Psychology, with Dr. Amit Goswami. So there's going to be a lot of deeply riveting information in today's interview to help the Flourish and Thrive listeners live their best emotionally and spiritually balanced life possible. Today, we're going to be discussing how to understand the way in which our mind works. We're going to understand that there are four worlds of human experience, and those are the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the supramental, and that healing incorporates all four levels. We're going to understand that a large part of trauma release is related to working with both the emotional and the physical bodies, which is different from cognitive and talk therapy. If you'd like to call into the show to ask Sunita any questions, please call 646-716-7979. And remember that if you're calling in from outside of the States, you need to add 001 before the number. So call 001-646-716-7979. I've been looking so forward to interviewing you, Sunita, to delve deep into your own journey, but also to learn how quantum psychology has enhanced your life and how you use it to enhance the life of your patients and also how we can use it to enhance the lives of our listeners. So welcome, Sunita Patani.
Thanks, Kate.
And Sunita, we've already been here once because we've had a few technical glitches tonight. So for our listeners that have been trying to contact us, thank you so much for bearing with us. We're there now, so that's all that matters. I apologise also for the barking dog. He's obviously contributing to the interview for those of you that can hear him coming through. Sunita, you're the author of two books. The first is My Secret Affair with Chocolate Cake, and your most recently published book is The Transcendent Mind. You're a psychotherapist and have worked as a teacher, and you're now lecturing around the world with Dr. Amit Goswami, who is a world-renowned theoretical quantum physicist. So how did you get to where you are now?
Okay, good question. Round two, she's going to say.
Okay. Let's go for it again.
Right. I would say that it was probably, Kate, a combination of really following my intuition and really, you know, listening to my heart, just going with what felt right, with a combination of just kind of going for it. So it was, you know, it was kind of listening to my inner voice and balancing it with outer action, really. I didn't often know what the outcome was going to be, but I just kind of went for it. That's the only thing that I can say, really. But having said that, though, Kate, one thing that I did actually want to say is that I'm not really much into goal setting, if I'm honest.
Okay.
So I tend to kind of go more with the flow, and I don't kind of plan things, because what I've kind of realized is that the bigger opportunities that have come about in life for me I couldn't have seen them coming a mile off, even if I would have tried to plan for them. So I tend to kind of just go with the flow.
That sounds pretty good. I think, do you know what, I think if we start to, I don't know, it's a difficult one. I've always been one for having a goal out there in the future, but I think if you set that goal in stone, it's very difficult, because you can almost restrict your development. And, you know, I'm sure that given sort of 5 years ago, you would have had absolutely no idea that you could possibly have ended up doing what you're doing right now.
Yeah, none at all. None at all. And, you know, I think I agree with what you're saying. It's just that, you know, actually, it's probably because, and I do want to say, folks, that each to their own. I'm not in any way saying that goal setting, you know, isn't a good thing to do. If that's what works for you, absolutely brilliant. But for me in particular, I think whenever I've tried to set goals in the past, because I did go through that experience, you know, in my journey, I found that it put pressure on me. And when I was working to kind of, you know, when I felt the pressure, I couldn't tune into, you know, I lost the passion almost, if that makes sense. And so when I sort of stepped away from that and thought, okay, well, I'm just going to do what I enjoy doing, and just keep taking action with things that I really enjoy doing, that's when, you know, the things really started to manifest in this way, I think.
So I think it is all driven from passion, isn't it? Because, and I think for somebody in your sphere, you realise that where you put your passion, where you focus your thoughts almost, because you're dealing very much within an energy realm, the sort of the quantum physics is very much, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I understand it is what you put out there is more or less what you get back. Does that fall under the quantum physics umbrella? Because it sounds really complicated to me.
Yes. And no, she says, but I would say that that's the general consensus that many people have sort of out there, that what you kind of give out is what you get back. So, yeah.
Because I've always thought that, in fact, I'm reading a book at the moment that states that we, you know, when we talk about affirmations, as it were, you can affirm what it is you want to happen, but then you've got to accept the... You've got to put it in, you've got to frame it in a positive way. So you can't be out there affirming that, say people affirm that they want to be financially wealthy. So they can't be thinking, I really want to be financially wealthy, but they've got this tiny little sort of back script going, saying, but I'm poor, so I can't be. Or, you know, they've got that negative emotion attached to the statement that they want to be financially wealthy. They actually have to be imagining themselves as though they have already achieved the wealth that they are after, and then by putting out that positive that positive thought and that positive energy, they're reciprocating the same positive energy back. And although it might not come back in the same form, it's very much a point of putting out something that's positive with a positive back script, rather than a sort of a positive idea, but with that fear of the negativity tainting it underneath. Do you see what I mean?
No, I do. And really, so you're referring to here, Kate, the law of attraction kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really interesting, actually, because, again, you know, I've played around with that quite a lot on my journey so far. And I'm going to try to word this in the most conducive way possible.
Mm-hmm.
I actually completely agree with it, if I'm honest. But I think my personal experience hasn't always mirrored that, so to speak.
Okay.
But that's my personal experience. And you know what? I could be wrong. I can only speak from, like, my own perspective.
Sure.
You know, and I do agree that, you know, that to, you know, you've got to have a particular, I guess, energy in order to attract particular things. And it's interesting, actually, because I think when I first actually got into this field, probably around about 10 to 15 years ago, I think I started playing around with the law of attraction. And I did the, you know, changing my thoughts and really trying to change my vibration and everything. And eventually I kind of gave up. And I think it was probably because I was approaching it perhaps from a way that didn't work for me, if that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but, and I think I did it the other way around, where I was just like, okay, so for me personally, I'm not going to focus on the outcome. I'm actually just going to focus on the here and now and what really lights my passion now and just go for it. And just, let's just see where the outcome kind of goes. So I did do that, but in a sort of back to front way. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. That's, the reason I sort of brought up the law of attraction is because I'm trying to build a bridge between quantum physics, which is quite off-putting as a title, and the general population who, you know, the law of attraction, I think most of us can understand. And, you know, that is using, the way I understand it, it's using energy and different vibrations to create what we would like to create in our lives or what we would like to manifest. So how do you bring quantum physics into everyday life for those of us that aren't studying something to your depth and lecturing with Dr. Amit Goswami?
That's a great question, actually, Kate. That's an excellent question. And, okay, so first of all, I think that the term quantum has actually become quite a buzzword, generally speaking.
It sounds quite cool.
It does sound cool, doesn't it? And you can't, you know, I know what you mean, though. You know, sometimes, like, the term quantum physics, and you just think, oh, my God. You know, I'm just actually doing a paper at the moment on sort of looking at the quantum properties of the brain in relation to consciousness and stuff. So I'm actually looking at some of the, it sounds more complicated than it is. But don't forget though, Kate, it's taken me a while to actually, you know, get familiar with the terms. And I've also spent a lot of time with Amit as well, to be fair. So I've had the opportunity to pick his brain for the last 2 or 3 years, you know, when I'm stuck. So that's really helped as well, you know, when you don't understand something. But the way that I actually bring it into practice is that it's really, first of all, for me, and I'll explain to you how this actually came about, how I actually ended up getting into this field. So what actually happened was when we finished our psychotherapeutic training, shortly afterwards, when I started seeing clients, Kate, I noticed that some of them were healing with the traditional methods that we've been taught, and some of them weren't, okay? So now I'd already had some sort of, I dabbled around already, like I mentioned, in the law of attraction. So I had some idea about this whole energy thing going on, but not in great depth. So what ended up happening was I started questioning as to why some of them were making good progress and why some weren't. And at first, actually, if I'm honest, I thought it was me because, you know, you're a new psychotherapist. Maybe I just wasn't very good at my job. You know, it could have been the case. But then I recognized that some of these clients had actually been to therapists previous. So my second question was, well, if it's not me some of the time, then is it you? Do you really want to be here? You know, do you really want to change? And yes, there were always, you know, some clients that didn't, weren't ready for the change, but actually a lot of them were. And then so I started thinking, okay, well, you know, this is interesting. So what's going on? What's like the missing piece? What do I not know? Which is actually quite a lot. And, you know, and at that same time, synchronicity, let's call it, I was actually reading A Course in Miracles and the Hindu scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita. And interestingly enough, both of these texts talk about the idea of, or the notion of a soul. And so I was like, okay, yeah, this is cool. And I've come across this before because I come from a Sikh upbringing. So, you know, we'd heard the term kind of soul tossed around before. I didn't really pay much attention to it, though. And so I started looking. Now, I'm quite scientific. So, one of the first questions I was like, okay, well, this is really cool. Where can I go how do I actually find out if this is a real concept, you know? And that's really when I started to look into the world of near-death experiences. And at the time, I didn't actually recognize that near-death experiences were actually an academic area of study. So there's actually, you know, a brilliant body of research that's been done. And specifically what I became really interested in was that, you know, there was some work done by some researchers which outlined the after, so the experiences that near-death experiencers actually went through. And a lot of these things, so, you know, it was often reported that people that had near-death experiences, some of them found that they were calmer, more spontaneous, their focus of life had changed, you know, they'd achieved some really, really good, great outcomes. And I looked at the list and I thought, isn't that amazing? Because when we see clients, is that not what a lot of clients actually come in for? You know, greater sense of peace and all of that. Yes. Now, I do just want to say that not all near-death experiences have this experience, but, you know, this is just some of the work that I found. And so mm-hmm. I started specifically looking at, okay, well, what is it exactly that you're experiencing? Having the near-death experiences, what's changing in your perception that's enabling you to experience that, and whether we could replicate that in therapy, whether we could bring that into therapy. And that's really where I started with this. And from there, it sort of led into the work of, you know, so all the near-death stuff and then the parapsychological stuff. So, you know, you're looking at psi experience, plant communication. There's a vast array of research on this, you know, on this sort of phenomena. So I started, you know, slowly looking through that. I went back to do some courses at Edinburgh Uni, actually the introduction to parapsychology courses. And that's really how this stuff came about. So in that time, I then started to form a link and I played around in practice with, okay, so how can we bring NDEs and all this research and how can we team it up with psychotherapy? And that's really what the Transcendent Mind's about. But when my publisher received the book, she recommended that it was sent to Amit to do a foreword. And that's really how the quantum aspect came in. So he read it and he came back and he said, this is really good. You found independently what I've been saying about quantum physics. You know, so although I hadn't brought the quantum into it at this point, he'd sort of said, well, you know, these are my findings. Shall we get together and work on a project? So for me, coming back to your original question, how do I bring quantum into this? Quantum for me is all about understanding, looking at the experimental data of, you know, well, what does quantum physics actually effectively, what are some of the things that it's showing us? So, you know, non-locality. So there's research done, for example, that shows that if you have two people that meditate together, put them in separate Faraday chambers, hook them up to EEG machines, if you show one of the participant light flashes, the other participant, even though they're not being shown the light flashes, will still pick up a similar EEG reading.
So an electroencephalogram, is that the EEG?
Yes, yeah, that's right.
So it's the brain triggering mechanism. So we're actually being able to see what parts of the brain are lighting up. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And the transfer potential, so the graphs that they produce effectively.
Yeah.
And what we found was that even though, you know, they were sitting in separate Faraday chambers and one was shown the light flashes and the other wasn't, the other brain was still picking up a similar pattern to the first person, which showed that, you know, because they'd meditated together. So the conclusion kind of was that because they'd meditated, they'd established an energetic link and therefore were on some level able to pick up one another's, you know, what was happening with one another. Does that make sense?
I think it does. So quantum physics essentially is that we are a whole existence is contained within a large bubble, as it were, of energy, and we all of our individual energy fields are interconnected with everybody else's energy field, including plants, trees, animals and other organisms. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be careful when I say this, because I think that there is a difference, Kate, between quantum physics is a really interesting area. And like I said before, I think quantum is used as quite a buzzword. And I think that there are different schools within quantum physics and how it interrelates to consciousness. And the truth is, you know, if you're absolutely true, it's all theory at the moment. We don't actually know. You know, there's nothing solid in place to say that this is what it is. So what we have is we have these experiences, and then we base obviously theory from these experiments and from these experiences. But the one that I personally like best, so, you know, the theory that I like best is, I think, along the lines of Amit's theories, which is the idealist approach, which basically states that consciousness is the ground of all being, effectively, which is what you're saying. You know, that everything arises from consciousness. How? We don't know. But, you know, we have experimental evidence that seems to suggest that this is the case.
And you know, it would be so refreshing to actually read something that says, yes, this is actually true, because I think, you know, we live in a life that is tangible. We want to be able to touch it. We want to be able to see it. We want to be able to prove that it exists. But on so many different levels of life, whether it's somebody staring at you and you turn around and look at them directly, and you know, they might be one of many, many people in a crowd, and you somehow turn around and look at the one person that's looking at you. Or, you know, you foresee something that's happening, which has happened to me on several occasions. And but so many times that it can't really be coincidental anymore. But I'm sure some people would say it is just coincidental. Or, you know, I'm absolutely convinced that something like this, an interconnectedness exists, and that it's almost a telepathy. I'm convinced that if we allowed ourselves the time and the sort of mental space, telepathy would become much easier, a much easier way of communicating with each other, because I think we're so busy these days that intuitive side of our brain isn't allowed to flourish anymore. But I'm convinced there is something there, but it's so difficult to say to, you know, if you're talking to somebody who completely poo-poos it, that you don't stand a chance, because there's no way of proving that it does exist. But I'm sure there's so many people out there that are convinced that it does exist.
Yeah, and I would completely agree with you on that. And again, you know, Kate, which is why I think that, you know, let's face it. I mean, it's really, in my personal opinion, it's our experiences, I think, that really lead the field, so to speak, you know, in terms of how we apply this to at least to psychotherapy. You know, what are the experiences that we're having, and what do they, you know, what do they look like? What do we go through? And then we really study it from that perspective. But I think what's really important is that if you're going to incorporate the quantum theory or the quantum side into psychotherapy, I do think that people, you know, read around, really have a look at the studies that are done out there, because you'll be in much better stead to actually, you're quite right, to almost argue your case to say, well, hang on a minute, did you know that this research has been done, and did you know it's actually been replicated? And here are the counter arguments. So you've actually got a really good idea as to, you know, kind of, you don't have to go really in depth, but you've got some idea as to what the pro and con arguments are. And I think the more that you look at it from that perspective, the more, for me anyway, it certainly becomes clearer that there's definitely what you're saying, in my opinion, is definitely, you know, I think right, personally.
Because also, you know, people might say, well, prove it to me that it exists. Well, we could say to them, well, prove that it doesn't. You know, there's an equal argument for saying, well, you tell me, you prove to me that it doesn't exist, and then I'll listen. Because I think, you know, the traditional way, Western way of thinking is that it's poo-pooed. Although I do think we're becoming much more aware of it now as a growing sort of more holistic community. But I'd quite like to say, just to somebody who is a complete non-believer, well, prove to me that it doesn't exist, and see how they do.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, Kate, it comes back to what I was saying before. Look at the data. You know, don't just have an argument based on, well, I've had this experience and therefore this has happened. Look at the data. Look at how it's been, you know, replicated, which is actually really, Kate, what a lot of quantum psychology, so the third book that I'm co-authoring with Amit, is actually about. It's bringing some of this data to the forefront, you know, to kind of say that, okay, let's really have a look at this, and let's have a look at what's happening. And of course, relating that to your own experience.
When is that book going to be published, Sunita, the one that you're co-authoring with Dr. Amit Goswami?
I think it's going to be next year. I think we're just in the final stages of wrapping it up. You know, but having said that, The Transcendent Mind is probably a really good starting point for that, because I've just given some, you know, I think it's a fairly easy read, so it might be quite a good introduction. I know quantum psych's a little bit heavier.
Yeah, I think we should all. I've actually ordered a copy, but because it's print on demand, I haven't had chance to read it before this interview, which is a real shame. But I'm certainly looking forward to reading it when it finally arrives.
Yeah.
So tell me, how do you incorporate this sort of transcendent mind quantum physics into your everyday therapeutic setting when you have a client that comes through the door and life's not going well? How can you incorporate that with their therapy?
So the way that I, over the years, so, you know, with research and really forming the quantum psychology model, like you mentioned in the introduction, so I tend to go with, generically speaking, that human beings have kind of four areas that need to be addressed. So physical, mental, vital, which is emotional, and intuitive or supramental. When a client comes in, the way that I particularly look, the way that I approach therapy is that ideally I come from the consciousness around a full being perspective. So everything's energy and energy is changeable. That's how I come into therapy.
Yeah.
Having said that, you know, the first thing that I am mindful of is, well, that this is my view. What's your view? You know, I don't always state my view. I just really like to find out more about the client. So sometimes clients just want to come in and they just want to do the traditional therapeutic stuff. You know, perhaps they're not ready for this stuff or not open to it or don't believe it. Absolutely fine. You know, no issues at all. But when they are open to it, Kate, the sort of ways that I sort of bring this in, and my focus actually is really in kind of trauma and how I actually use this with trauma. So sometimes, even when a client's not open, I look at it from the trauma perspective and try to draw it in from that perspective. So just looking at some examples as to how I would use this. So I've mentioned the four sort of, you know, the mental, the vital, the physical and the intuitive bodies.
Yes.
Now, I think that therapy exists. I think there's certain things that we have to do. I think there are certain aspects to therapy. So the aspects that I think that we have to, have a look at partaking for effective therapy is exploration and, just really exploring what's going on within you. Okay, so actually exploration and awareness. The second strand, the second aspect, I think, is belief system clearing, which is a little bit coming back to what we were talking about to do with the law of attraction earlier on. Okay?
Yeah.
The third aspect is the flow experience, so learning how to get into that place of flow to help process and progress healing. And the fourth aspect is learning how to build new skill sets. So these are generally the four steps that I follow. They're not necessarily linear, but these are four aspects that I dip in and out of. So the most essential aspect, or at least for me anyway, one of the most essential aspects is really looking at the belief clearing aspect. So really looking at where your core beliefs are. And in order to work with this aspect, I don't really use much of a cognitive approach when I work with this. So a lot of people may use, you know, CBT and turn it around like that.
Yeah.
So I've, aside from the quantum stuff, my other area of interest, like I said before, is trauma. And trauma, you know, there's a lot of trauma that gets trapped in the body and obviously the emotions that we feel. And the problem is you can't always, for all clients, now you can with some, but you can't with many of them, you can't necessarily talk through and get rid of your feelings just through talking. Some people can't do that. You know,
yeah.
So if you've got a client coming in with, which I'm sure you've probably had some experience, if you've got some PTSD, so post-traumatic disorder stuff coming through, you know, a talk therapy isn't very effective, in my opinion,
speaking very
genetically for PTSD, all right?
Yeah.
Similarly, if you've got, you know, issues with really strong, you know, if you've got like DID issues or, you know, stuff that's got a really strong phobias, a really strong energetic component to it, that's really when I start to bring in more of the energetic work.
Yeah.
You know, and really working with the energetic realm, and that develops, you know, month to month, that's developing. But that's all really about working with the body and working with the emotional body and releasing it in a different way altogether. You know, so I recently had I don't usually work with youngsters, but this particular case I did because it was a recommendation, and I had a 9-year-old come in with pretty severe anxiety. And I spent two sessions with the child and taught him some of the energy psych techniques. And the rest of the work, actually, I didn't do with the child, I did with the mother. So this is how I've directly brought the quantum aspect in, you know, the non-locality, the fact that we're sort of energetically linked. And through a process, we basically ascertained that his anxiety was coming from, largely coming from his womb experience, because he had a cord around his neck, which, you know, which was significantly impacting his field, because, of course, you store everything from point of conception. And I think I must have done around about, I think perhaps 4 to 5 sessions with the mother, working on the mother's memories of the birth and working through that. And the son hasn't had an anxiety episode since.
So by curing or sort of working through the mother's memories on an energetic level, you managed to then diffuse the son's anxiety.
Yes, that's correct. And again, that's using quantum approaches, you know. And this is, I'm still looking into this. I've just, as you know, started researching in this area of really how we're using intention very specifically to heal using quantum approaches. And yeah, so we're still playing around with this. But yeah, effectively, that's what happened.
So without sort of giving up any confidentiality, are you able to explain a few, you know, what energy work did you actually do on the mother, and what energy psych techniques did you use with the child in order to overcome this anxiety?
Yeah, so I used EFT with the child.
Okay. Emotional freedom technique.
Technique, yeah. And I used a combination of EFT matrix reimprinting and a little bit of my own protocol that I'm still working on developing with the mother to actually release this. These are really the techniques that I use. But I do want to say this, though, Kate. The tools are extremely effective. But over the years, what I've learned really slowly is that, and obviously from speaking to many practitioners too, that actually what's more important to a certain degree than just the tools is how the art of using the tools, you know. So it's an amalgamation of the science and the art.
Yeah.
And it's really knowing how and when to use the tools. And this is really where a person's got to use their intuition, or, you know, their intuition or their supramental body to know how are we going to actually use this tool so that it's gives us the results that we need.
So could you just explain a little more detail what EFT matrix reimprinting is for our listeners?
Yeah, so EFT is basically emotional freedom technique, and it's just a series of steps where, you know, on certain tap points where you tap on certain parts of the body. And it's based on the theory that we have the energy meridians. And so when we tap on certain points, we're effectively correcting, realigning our energy, which actually neutralizes and gets rid of the trauma, so to speak. And I may not actually be using the correct terminology, guys, so forgive me, but it's along that line, you know. And it is actually very, very, very effective with sort of really trauma release. It's very, very good, you know. And I know that there are a number of different therapies, actually. So, you know, you hear about like EMDR, theta healing is another one. So, you know, there are a number of different sort of energies therapies that work in, you know, what produce the same sort of results. And matrix reimprinting is really about communicating with the traumatized part of you effectively, and treating and working with that. We call them echoes, working with the echoes to actually resolve the past. And we incorporate EFT into that. And that's also very, very effective as well. It's almost like the brain rewrites some of the memories, so to speak.
And
so,
is it true that with matrix reimprinting, because you're tapping on the echo, you know, for people that have gone through terrible, terribly traumatic incidents in their past, they don't want to have to reconnect with that sadness and that emotional intensity. So by tapping on the echo, it enables them to reconnect with them at their younger self without having to delve into the emotions that were associated with that traumatic event. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Spot on, Kate. And I think that that's, you know, a really important factor that you've brought up, because, and again, this is just my personal opinion. If I can, I prefer not to re-traumatize a client. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes it does, sometimes when it's so raw and if there's like a lot of emotion there, there's a possibility that that may happen. All right. But as far as I like to work, I don't like to re-traumatize the client. I've had many clients, Kate, come in that have said to me that they've been for talk therapy. And guys, I just want to say, I think talk therapy is wonderful. And Kate, this is what we were actually trained in, right?
So
we,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, we were trained to, and I still use it. And it's absolutely brilliant. But I have had a lot of clients that have come in and said that, you know, they've talked through it. And for some of them, it's just re-traumatized them. So,
yeah.
You know, one of the reasons that Matrix is good is because it removes that re-traumatizing element. The second place where Matrix is really, really good is because some people are very, very good at disassociating. So, You know, there are some people that are like, and these are quite often people that, you know, will often say that they're very strong and things happen and they kind of, you know, they get up and they kind of, you know, brush off and move on and do what they have to do. And when you ask them to think about a traumatic experience, they know that on some level they think it may be affecting them, but they just can't tune into the feelings anymore. So Matrix is really, really good for getting to that place and just rewriting the memory anyway without actually having to try to get the feeling to tap it out. So yeah.
Yeah, I have to say I've become very much more involved with EFT. I haven't done my Matrix re-imprinting training yet, but I actually contacted Carl Dawson, the guy behind the Matrix re-imprinting the other day, and I'm going to book in for a course upon your recommendation, Sunita, because it just makes so much sense. But even just doing general tapping, I don't know if you listened to the tapping 2017 tapping summit, World Summit. It was fantastic, and you know, I was doing something. I'd had a really traumatic weekend a couple of months ago, and I woke up the following day. And do you know what? My hips had seized up. One of my ankles had seized up, and I was in so much pain. And I'm sure it was down to the traumatic event. And so I just tapped on the pain and the emotions and the fear and everything else that had happened that I could identify that had happened within me. And do you know what? It went within. Oh, the next morning I woke up feeling an awful lot better, but within an hour, having forgotten about it because I had to rush off to go and collect the children from school. But when I stepped out of the car, it was just like, oh my goodness, my hips don't hurt, that I can move freely.
I'm sure it was
tapping that released the negative energy that I'd been storing in my body.
Yeah, this is it. This is exactly it, Kate, you know. And I mean, I would go as far as saying that definitely in terms of therapeutic practice, the EFT and Matrix has certainly revolutionized my therapeutic practice. So, and do you remember, I used to say that to you when we used to meet as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's revolutionized it. And I think the key is really learning how to learning the art of how to use it with different protocols and in different places. But I think that's been really good. And I think that when you team that up with the quantum physics knowledge and, you know, you can add to the protocols, we have the ability to actually form, you know, quite a strong therapeutic practice, in my opinion, when you put it all together.
You know, it sounds so powerful. Sunita, what we're going to do, we're going to stop for a few minutes and just listen to Pharrell Williams' Happy, which I know is one of your favourite songs. And then when we come back, I think we're going to delve a little bit further and see how you incorporate quantum physics into your EFT protocols, if that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. All right, yeah. I'll be back again in a moment. Here's Pharrell Williams' Happy.
By the way,
that song so much. Do you know, it's one of the most ubiquitous songs of 2014, but it nearly didn't happen. Happy was the result of a lot of pressure from Universal Pictures to create the perfect song for the film Despicable Me 2, where Gru, one of the characters, needs to be portrayed in a super happy mood. And apparently the studio kept telling Pharrell that his early attempts weren't good enough, so he kept trying and trying. And sure enough, upon his 10th attempt, he came up with the track that we know as Happy. So there's a story in this too. It means to keep on trying. So if at first you don't succeed, how many successful people do you think are out there that I wonder if they'd given up after the first few attempts, we'd never have known their names that we all recognise so fondly nowadays. So good for Pharrell, and lovely, lovely song. So that was a great choice there, Sunita. I love it. Thanks so much for that.
It's lifted us all.
So going back to EFT Matrix re-imprinting, you mentioned before the song that you are devising your own protocol. Can you expand on that a little more?
Yeah, so, it's not really one protocol that I can kind of talk about. Okay, so I'm just going to talk about how, and I briefly touched upon this earlier, actually, how I've actually used, so like I said, I've taken the quantum psychology principles, okay? So namely, the quantum psychology principles, we're looking at non-locality, which is basically, being able to communicate telepathically without a signal. Okay, we're looking at tangled hierarchy. So it's really looking at how consciousness relates to the brain. There's a whole massive argument, interesting argument around that. So these are the sorts of, principles that I've kind of based the protocol on. Discontinuity, so the concept of quantum leaps and how to bring that into healing. And, you know, and to be fair, Kate, if I'm absolutely honest with you, a lot of my time is actually spent kind of in between now, researching and clinic. So a lot of the stuff that I'm developing is still early stages, and I'm still really playing around with it and practicing with it, so to speak, you know. But it's exciting times, I would say.
I think it's just incredible. Yeah, we're sort of down to our last sort of 11 or 12 minutes of the interview. What top three insights as a quantum psychologist would you be able to offer our Flourish and Thrive listeners to walk away with? Is there, three nuggets of information that you could impart to our audience that might think, I hadn't considered that in life and perhaps I should give it a go?
That's a really good question.
I know, it's tricky, sorry.
Yeah, it is, and it's a really good question. I think one of the first things that I would say, and probably the most important thing, in my opinion, is know thyself. You know, we've heard it a million times before. And when I use that term, know thyself, I literally mean understand how you actually function, right? And I'm not just speaking about, necessarily on a quantum perspective, but, Kate, it's really amazing. So when we really have a look at trauma, now everybody experiences trauma to a certain degree. And trauma doesn't necessarily have to be something massive. So you have like the big T traumas, which are the rapes, the murders, and, the really big stuff that we can all relate to that, wow, that's a big T trauma. But the truth of the matter is that many people on a daily basis also experience many small T traumas. So a small T trauma could be, you've gained weight, let's say, over the last few months or something. You go somewhere and someone just says, oh, haven't you gained weight? And you're already really struggling with body image issues. And that would be, categorized as a trauma for you. And, it drives your behavior in some way. So one of the things that I would strongly suggest is that, guys, understand the role that trauma actually plays in your life. Understand, how the brain actually functions, the fact that we go into fight, flight, or freeze, and really begin to recognize that it actually is possible to release these traumas, which actually do affect our belief systems, which would bring me on to my second point. To get familiar, start to understand what your core belief systems are, because from your core belief systems, so for example, just to give you an idea, when I work with some clients that want to take this route, one of the first things I'll ask them to do is the timeline, not only for them but also for me. Usually when somebody does their own timeline, they look at their timeline, they think, oh my goodness, I can see the theme that I'm running. So I might be running isolation and abandonment, or I might be running devaluation or something like that. And that gives us a massive insight as to where the choices that we're making. So coming back to the law of attraction, a lot of the advice out there is you've really got to feel it. You really got to think it, feel it, and you know. But the fact of the matter is that if you have a theme, which all people do, and really strong themes running through your life from the point of conception, stuff that you've accumulated, it's going to be difficult for some people to align themselves to the law of attraction, which is why, you know, some people you will find say that I don't want to do this, or it's not working. You know, it comes down to your belief systems, and it's really about the art of recognizing what beliefs are you actually running, and then more specifically, how do I begin to clear them? Does that make sense?
And it does. And also, the problem with something along those lines of the belief system is that it's a very comfortable cloak for some people to wear. And
yes,
although they know they want to get rid of this behavior, it's so difficult because they've got to essentially change. They've got to kind of chuck all their little elements of their entire being up into the air and let them fall into a different configuration, because we stick with what we're comfortable with, and we stick with the scripts that we're used to running and playing and talking to ourselves with. And I think it's so important to understand belief systems, but again, I think it's then another step ahead to actually decide I'm going to abandon my negative belief systems and adopt positive ones.
Yeah, I think also, Kate, you know, a lot of that, the primary step, which I completely agree with, comes down to, you know, first of all, from a cognitive perspective, looking at our secondary gains, you know, how are these negative belief systems actually serving us? But what you will find is that when you start to do the energy work, it's not so much as that you necessarily have to change your belief system. It will kind of begin to happen as you begin to work on the themes that you're running. You know, so the timeline that I talk about is only a very small, it's a very useful portion, but it's a very small portion of just kind of understanding where the themes are. And then as you begin to do the energy work, you will find that ever so slowly, you know, or very, very quickly, actually, depends on the client, the themes begin to fall away. But yeah, I would agree with what you're saying.
See, that's fascinating. That's where the energy work then is so beautiful, because it then elevates that individual beyond where they could possibly ever dream of being elevated to, if you see what I mean.
Absolutely. And this is why I say, you know, coming back to, you know, the four levels that I was talking about, like the mental, the physical, the emotional.
The reason I
distinguish between these levels is because the mental realm, which is the thinking part. Now, when we use, you know, when you look at the conscious and the subconscious mind, okay, conscious faculty, 5 to 10% of us. All right?
Yeah.
I think it's about 5%, right? Subconscious, 90 to 95% as a generic. Okay.
It's like an iceberg, isn't it?
It is the iceberg. Belief systems are situated in the subconscious. So how are we going to then, you know, we've got 95% power going on with belief systems, and we're trying to use the mind and cognitive methods to change what's happening very strongly on an emotional and vital level. You see, this is why for a lot of people, when they look at the law of attraction, it feels like it's an upward journey, because the baggage that you are carrying, unless you first become aware and begin to release it, and what you will find is life will naturally take on an easier turn. You won't have to focus so much on this is what I want to attract, and, you know, this is what my goal is. It becomes so much easier because you tend to align with where you are, and things begin to happen. You know, it comes back to that passion. Release some of the baggage, your passion starts to come through, and it will be the driving force for the law of attraction to take you wherever it is that you're going to flourish and thrive.
Yeah, hey, yeah, well done. Nice link there. Thank you, Sunita.
Just kind of works. There you go. You know.
So tell me, what's your favourite quote?
Oh, my favourite quote. That's a really, really, really good question. Can't think off the top of my head. Probably something a bit rude, if I'm honest.
I'm just going through your questions. I think you mentioned something about life is short.
Oh, yeah. Did I? Okay. So yeah. I must have been feeling that on that day. Okay. And I don't have that to hand. Do you want to read it out for me if you've got it there?
Yeah. You know, it is. It's as short as it says. Life is short, because it reminds you how to focus on the good stuff.
There you go. Sorted. You did that beautifully, Kate.
Stepped in there nicely.
So, I must have been, yeah. No, but anyway, yeah, go on.
Well, I just think that is fantastic because I spend a lot of time obviously working with people in hospice, and the top three regrets are, off the top of my head, they didn't tell their loved ones how much they loved them, they didn't spend enough time with their loved ones, and they didn't spend enough of their life being true to the person that they knew they were, and they've been living a facade to satisfy other people's desires for them. And you know, that all boils down to the same quote, life is too short. It is, yeah, about being, expressing who you are authentically and honestly and making the most of what you've got left. That's how I try and live my life.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you said that so beautifully. And again, a lot of what, you know, the three points that you've just said really relate, comes down to belief systems, you know. And also, Kate, one of the things that I didn't actually mention was the role of belief systems in physical disease, which is also something that I work with. So, you know, chronic fatigue and belief systems, water, yeah, retention and belief systems. There's amazing work out there which shows links between these, and it is actually possible to you know, reverse these if we know what we're doing with them.
With something like, say, water retention, you know, in a couple of minutes, are you able to give us a quick sort of synopsis of what you might suggest for that treatment?
Okay, so not really, no.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because every client is very individual. What I can, yes, tell you, however, is, so one of the key themes that sometimes may come about with water retention, because there are so many different factors, right? You know, and again, it comes down to those four things. You know, what are the physical factors? What are the mental factors? What are the emotional factors? What are the intuitive factors? So from an emotional factor, the sort of themes that I would be looking at are isolation and abandonment issues, which is also, okay, quite heavily related to people who find that they gain weight and they can't release the weight, quite often are running isolation, abandonment themes in their life. You know, so that's just a very small example of where to go.
Fascinating.
And a lot of that is actually to do with when we experience trauma, where in our brain the trauma actually sits, which brain layer it relates to, and then what emotion that ties in with. So, and the reason I said that I can't do it in 2 minutes is because it's just way too much information. But there's just a very small snippet of you know, where I would go with something like that.
My goodness. So basically, people need to contact you at sunitapatani.com and find out further information from you, and possibly book in for a consultation with you if they've got issues that they think they... I'm sure you'd be able to help people with so many different complications that they probably lived with all their lives. And, you know, they've tried traditional talking therapy and it just really... bottles, you know, it comes down to needing some energy work doing with them, yeah, along the lines with, you know, that what you can offer.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what I would want to say to all clients as well, guys, you know, look, I'm very honest in the way that I work. Every client to me is an experiment, and I'm very honest in saying that. And I know that a lot of people wouldn't agree with me, but it is the truth. I never know what your outcome is going to be. I have a pretty good outcome at the moment. Like, many of my clients go on to do really well, but, you know, it is the truth. You know, it's a journey. It's a journey and it's exploration. So, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Joe, I wish this interview could go on for longer, because it's just so much I still want to find out about as well. It's just been terrific, Sunita. Listen, we're coming out of time, but what's the best place to find you at, Sunita?
www.sunitapatani.com or quantumpsychology.blog.
So quantumpsychology.blog. Well, I'll make sure I put all of these in the show notes. Thank you so much for being my guest on the Flourish and Thrive radio show today, Sunita. People would have taken so much helpful information from this interview, and you've given us so much to think about. To our listeners, thank you so much for being here. This is episode 4 of the Flourish and Thrive radio show with me, Kate Hartley of flourishtherapy.co.uk. And Sunita Patani was my insightful and inspiring guest. And again, you can find her at www.sunitapatani.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.